Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, Lions are coming off a bye week. Big revenge game, I guess you could call it a revenge game, against the Dallas Cowboys this Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, second revenge game in a row, right? And they took care of business against the Seahawks. And I think things are setting up well for a nice revenge game. And another victory this Sunday.
Luckily, nothing wacky happened to the Lions over the bye week. No crazy, nobody stuck in a hurricane right now and can't get back to Detroit or, any of that sort of thing. So might as well just dig into it, right? Start with the transactions leading us into this Cowboys game. First off, signed to the practice squad, edge defender, Sam linebacker Cam Gill and Al-Qaeden Muhammad.
Gil is, I'd say, a little bit closer to being like a more of a Sam, whereas Muhammad is a little bit closer to being more of a defensive end. They're both kind of in the range where they could do a little bit of both. They now have four depth edge players on the practice squad, and so it's an interesting situation. It seems excessive. Unless maybe you're going to promote one of those guys, right? And there's a chance maybe that happens. The Lions do have an open spot on their 53-man roster because they haven't replaced a player since they put Iffy on IR ahead of the Seahawks game. So they've got an open spot. Possible they elevate one of those guys. They could go a variety of different ways, really. But having four edge guys really is it's quite a bit, and maybe it's just competition to see how things shake out, but it could also be that maybe someone will be on a move.
Trying to push James Houston one last time.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with him. I feel like he's trying to do too much, and I really wish he could get back to some of his basics and just be more of a pure pass rusher, but it seems like he's got a lot on his plate, and it hasn't really been working out, unfortunately. So maybe he'll stumble upon something during the bye week. Maybe the light will click on. Maybe they'll take some restrictions off. I don't know. There's options because they still haven't released him or anything like that, and so I think it would be a great situation if they somehow manage to make that work, but it sure seems like they're on borrowed time.
All right. In corresponding moves to be able to add Gill and Muhammad, released from the practice squad are safety Eric Hallett and kicker Matthew McCrane. So sticking with Jake Bates, where else would you go?
Fip was asked about if the release of McCrane was more of a attaboy to Bates, and Phipps said no, it was just a they needed an extra space on the practice squad, and that's the guy that just got exited just because they needed an extra spot. So I still think they're uberly confident in Bates at this point. So the fact that they're willing to move on to from the kicker is, I think, again, it supports that theory as well.
All right, so the 53-man roster remains at 52. There's still an open roster spot after Ifeanyi Melifonwu went on injured reserve.
So, I don't know. I think it could be an edge guy, like I was kind of alluding to there. They don't really have to see, they really don't seem to have any other glaring spots because of they have a pretty healthy roster. When we talk about injury report, we'll get into that in a minute. It really seems like edge is a spot where they could add a guy. Four guys that are more like pure edge players. Then you have a guy like Pat O'Connor, who is a defensive lineman who can play inside out. And so it kind of that's where my gut is, but I don't know. I don't have any real good information one way or another. That's just kind of what I'm thinking off the top of my head.
All right, moving on to the injured list. Back to normal with the injured list. Center Frank Ragnow, but this time a pectoral injury. Full practice Wednesday, Thursday. Also shoved Dan Campbell in the hallway to let him know that he's going to be able to play Sunday.
We've come a far way since Patricia, but I can't imagine a player even considering doing that during
Considering
6 years ago.
assaulting Matt Patricia.
But I mean, look, this is that he's a different species he's just, I don't understand how he's able to heal as rapidly as he does. And all indications are he's going to be ready to go. He says he's going to be ready to go. And if you're pushing a head coach around to show you've got your strength, I think that's a real good indicator that you're going to be ready to play.
All right, next up, Brian Branch, illness, full practice Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, they didn't say, they said they didn't know what kind of illness he had, but it sure seems like he's past it, right? Illnesses have such a wide range of things that
Sure.
you have to be a little cautious. The nice thing was is that Dan Campbell did say that the illness was a separate issue from the concussion. So it wasn't like he had a symptom of the concussion that resulted in an illness. So they were separate issues. And he was very adamant that they were separate issues. And so it sounds like he's over it. Probably never really get an answer. Could have been a stomach bug, COVID, who knows, right? Like it could, or anything in between. So looks like he's back. He's an important piece. Lions struggled with some tackling against the Seahawks. With Brian Branch in a mix. Hopefully that gets cleaned up.
Safety Kirby Joseph, hamstring, added Thursday as a limited practice participant.
Yeah, so he wasn't on the injury report on Wednesday. Gets limited, the limited designation. Jeremy was at practice, noted that Kirby was there for walkthroughs. I'm sorry, during for like warm-ups. And then when it came time to do individuals, Kirby exited the practice field. It's possible, like Kirby's done this before where he's shown up, warmed up, and then exited. And then been limited, maybe missed a practice, and then he was able to come back and play in the game. So I'm not, I usually, my line here is midweek injuries are bad, but it's possible that it is in this situation as well. But this is something Kirby's done before. So I'm a little bit more optimistic that he should be okay. So ideally, you get him and Branch together because I think they've been really dynamic as a pairing. And he'd love to have that duo against the Cowboys.
Next up, name we haven't heard in a while, offensive lineman Christian Mahogany, non-football injury, has started practicing and is in the 21-day evaluation window.
So they started that clock on Tuesday because they coming out of the break, they do a practice on Tuesdays and then get players off Wednesday. Typically, it's the other way around, but with that extra day off, they try and switch things up and they get like an extra day of like practice or and not necessarily practice, but extra day in like install. And so it gives the player a day off later in the week as well, which they believe helps them, especially with like recovery. And so he practiced Tuesday, then he practiced again on Thursday, both times in full. And it's just an evaluation point at this stage. I don't expect him to be active. I actually expect him to be ruled out. Him being ruled out would only be like them saying he's not ready to practice yet or he's not ready to play yet. We're not going to activate him. So I think they might rule him out and then he'll practice next week, probably be ruled out again. And then he'll probably practice that whole third week as well. And then they'll make a decision on him. I don't think it's certain that he's going to come back and be added to the roster. I think in my gut, I'm leaning more towards him being added so that they can keep practicing him as opposed to, putting him back on the NFI. But they have a lot of guys that they rely on right now on the offensive line. And if he comes up, you'd have to be asking someone else to step up and fill a role so that you can keep him on the roster and let him practice and develop, but not necessarily rely on him in a game. So it's an interesting decision that's going to have to be made in 3 weeks. But for now, I expect them just to practice him, rule him out, practice him, rule him out, and then practice him and see where he's at and make a decision then.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because you don't want to put him on IR, right? Because he won't develop anymore. Or maybe he
Right.
will. He can do stuff on his own, but he's not going to be able to be with the team, right? And
Correct.
continue practicing. So it's no good.
Yeah,
All right.
it's kind of why I think it's kind of why I think they'll keep him and maybe move a guy like Michael Neese off the active
Back down to the
roster
practice squad.
and then try and get him back on the practice squad. Exactly. And then you have the option to elevate him. You can always re-sign him if you need to and make a decision down the road then. I could also see them saying, hey, we have six wide receivers right now. Maybe we don't need six and make a move on there. And then I don't know. They've got some options, but I really think it would be beneficial to try and keep him and develop him kind of like the same path they're doing with Manu. And Mahogany is, he came from a gap system. So he's not unfamiliar with the style of offensive line play that the Lions run. It's just going to take a long acclimation process. So could he come in and be a contributor late in the season? Maybe, but he's going to have to practice to see if he can get there.
All right. Now time to talk about the Cowboys. Not going to talk about a game last week because there was no game last week. So, Cowboys, Sunday afternoon, 4:25 p.m. at AT&T Stadium in Dallas, or is it, I don't know, it might be in, it's in Arlington, isn't it? It's
I think it's
not Dallas
Arlington.
proper, but
Correct.
metropolitan area. Lions favored by 3. Fox crew for the game, Kevin, number one crew for the game, Kevin Burkhardt, our first Tom Brady experience with the Lions. Aaron Andrews, a field reporter. Tom Rinaldi, also field reporter. Referees John Hussey, 23rd year in the NFL, 10th as a referee, averages 11 penalties a game. It's a pair under the 13.08 NFL referee penalty average.
So last year, Hussey was kind of flag happy. And he got a reputation of being a little flag happy. And almost like when he would make a mistake, he would throw more flags to kind of cover up his mistake. And it just there was a pattern that a lot of people recognized. And I think what we're seeing this year is the counter to that, where he's being a little bit more cautious. And not throwing the flag as much. And honestly, for this style of game, I'll take it. So I think if you can get a guy who's throwing under the average, you're going to take that for a game that has, always something controversial pop up in it.
Well, and this game's bound to have some controversy
Right.
in it. Going into the draft, these two teams obviously met last year. Obviously, some wacky things occurred that may have prevented the Lions from winning. It may have been the right call by the referees. I wouldn't agree with that, but it's definitely possible. In the draft, first round pick, they took offensive tackle Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. Turned into their starting off the left tackle and currently injured.
Yeah, he got pulled from last week's game. He's been practicing, but he's on the injury report. It seems like he's got an inside track to play. But we'll talk more about his play a little bit later, but he's a guy you're going to keep an eye on through Friday's practices to see if he gets a designation or not.
Second round, 56th pick. They took edge defender Marshawn Nealand from Western Michigan. Of course, there was plenty of chatter in our off-season podcast about his potential to be a Lion. He is also injured, but he will not play.
Yeah, so he stepped up into a starting role last week because of other injuries, and he was injured very early. And unfortunately, his injury is not season ending, but multi-week, maybe multi-month ending. It'll keep him out mo potentially a couple months, and so it's close to season ending, but he's got a chance to come back a little bit later in the season. Tough break for the rookie who had an opportunity in front of him.
Third round pick 73 took Kansas State center Cooper Beebe, who is in the starting lineup.
Yeah, another favorite of ours. I liked him much better
Right.
at guard than I did at center. But they've got him at center, and I think he's maybe a little bit out of place. He can still play, obviously, at center. I like him much better at right guard personally, but they have a all pro there. So BB is he's their starting guy, and so they've got two rookies starting on that offensive line, which is potentially advantageous for the Lions.
Although the Cowboys traditionally very good when it comes to drafting
Sure.
and developing offensive linemen.
Yeah, and both those guys are good. Where they got them are they're legitimate starters.
Third round pick, number 87 overall linebacker, Maurice Leufau from Notre Dame, also a starter at the outside linebacker position, also injured.
Yeah, he again, I think he will probably play. He is kind of like their third linebacker, so kind of like it's not necessarily a Sam role like the Lions have, but it's a third linebacker. He'll come on the field half the time, and he'll get his snaps. But and while he's technically a starter, he plays 40-50%, and he gets a fair amount of field time.
Fifth round pick, number 174 overall. They took cornerback Kalen Carson from Wake Forest, starting corner, but he's injured.
Yeah, and we'll get into Deron Bland, who is the who was the starter but was injured in camp. He got put on IR. Carson was starting, and then he gets injured, and he's missed a couple of weeks. They activated the clock on Bland. Carson also looks like he's getting close, so it's possible they end up getting both guys back, or it's possible maybe they're both out. It's going to be interesting to see how it all kind of shakes out, but it's possible he jumps back into the starting lineup. It's also possible he splits that starting role with Bland if Bland returns, or maybe there's a third guy that they add into the mix as well, because there's a familiar name who got a start last week because of these two injuries, and we'll get to him in a minute.
Sixth round pick, number 216 wide receiver, Ryan Flournoy from Southeast Missouri State, not a starter.
Yeah. It's crazy how many starters they have. And the thing is
Fruitful draft class.
a fruitful draft class, but at the same time, this is not a Gibbs Laporta branch
Sure.
quadrant of players here. Like they're not at the level that the Lions. They're more playing these guys because they need it and they think that they can, draft and develop these guys quickly and they think they're ready. And a couple of them, I think, are maybe it's premature to put them in the roles that they're in, but they weren't aggressive in the offseason and free agency. And so they've turned to the draft to try and get these guys. And I think you're seeing some inexperience on the team because they've had to rely on so many rookies in premier roles. Flaherty's not one of them, but he's still going to see his snaps.
Seventh round pick 233 offensive tackle Nathan Thomas from Louisiana. He's currently on IR. Did you even want to mention anything about him?
No.
Seventh round pick number 244 interior defensive lineman Justin Rogers from Auburn. An Auburn Tiger doesn't make a lot of sense being a Cowboy, so he's now a Bengal.
Right. Yeah, he got cut and then Bengals grabbed him. So he's over in Cincy.
Right. Coaching staff changes. We are well aware that the Cowboys head coach is embattled, Mike McCarthy. It's never just Mike
Yes.
McCarthy. He's on a short leash at this point in his career. This might be his last season in Dallas. We'll see.
It's crazy to me when you look at just like from a numbers standpoint. Like if you just look at him on paper,
His
right?
wins and losses.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, even beyond his, yeah, it's absolutely wins and losses.
Championship pedigree.
He's got a Super Bowl. He's 169 and 104 win loss record. He was 6-10 his first year in Dallas. In the last 3 seasons, he's gone 12-5. And like 12 and 5, 12 and 5, 12 and 5.
Yep,
But
three straight years.
he gets an early exit in the first round, and all of a sudden they're like, well, we might move on from him, right? Like he's a guy that is constantly not given credit for what his resume says, and they look at him, most people look at him and say the team is winning because of its talent in spite of McCarthy, as opposed to McCarthy being the guy who helps him get there, which is, it's a bit shocking of a guy who's been a head coach since 2006.
No, 18 years as a head coach at this point. No, I don't know. I mean, he coach, like, you're
Hey,
right.
he gets stale. He gets stale. He gets bland. He gets
Right.
predictable. And it's, we've even seen it already that happened this season already.
And they got rid of him in Green Bay because, well, they got, he got worried, like, he got to an end of the line
Yeah,
in Green Bay. He had a couple.
he got Robert Solid in Green
Yeah.
Bay.
Yep. He says, no, Rodgers says he had nothing to do with his firing.
Whatever. I don't believe that at all. Yeah. No, let's cater the entire team to this 40-year-old quarterback and then
And then
not
ask him
talk to
what he
him.
thinks about
Yeah, come on.
about firing a coach.
Get out of town. Yeah, McCarthy is the other victim in the Rodgers
Victim.
drama. Yeah. And yeah, in the past, what, 5 years, 6 years, Rodgers has exited two quarterbacks, in my opinion, or two head coaches,
Two head
in my
coaches. Well,
opinion.
and I think he didn't he kind of want LaFleur gone in Green
Oh,
Bay,
he
but
did.
they
And they
chose
stuck with
LaFleur over him.
exactly. Yes.
Which is
It's
probably the right move.
100% right. Oh, I agree with that too. But yeah, McCarthy is the other guy who Sala's the one in the news this week, but McCarthy was the first. He was the OG coach that got fired because of Rodgers.
Right, there's some nepotism peppered around
Oh,
this coaching staff.
certainly.
Brian Schottenheimer is offensive coordinator. He probably tops the list of that group. New defensive coordinator in Mike Zimmer, who's a, you know, old offensive, old off, old defensive coordinator, has been around forever. One of the great defensive coordinators in the
Yeah,
league.
Zimmer got his NFL debut in Dallas, coached for Dallas for 9 seasons in different roles, eventually becoming DC. And he was Aaron Glenn's defensive coordinator for 2 years. Aaron Glenn was his cornerback one for 2 years. And and then Dan Campbell was on a player when Zimmer was on Dallas's defensive staff. So like these coaches know him for, 2 decades, right? At least. So there's familiarity. And then of course he was the head coach of the Vikings for 7 years, I think it was. And so
72-56 record for the Vikings.
and he ends up back in Dallas after a couple years off, after he took a couple years away after his son passed away. And he gets a DC job here after Dan Quinn, who was Dallas's coordinator last year, accepts a head coaching job in Washington. Zimmer comes back and he kind of scales their defense back to kind of what you would expect, right? Like, if you remember from last year, Quinn used a lot of nickel and dime sets. He used a lot of three safety sets. He used light linebackers. And so it was a defense that you could, gash up the middle. And that's kind of what the Lions did. Zimmer has come in. He's settled it down, got it more back into a traditional style offense, runs like a 4-3 with a 4-2 nickel. And it's a lot more standard. And then they're trying to play the same way you've seen Zimmer's defenses operate, that whole time he was in Minnesota. Disguise coverages, press man, cover four. They're going to blitz in the top half of the league. They're going to be, they're going to be in top half of the league percentage wise for blitzing. They prioritize stopping the run. The difference here is in Dallas, even though they prioritize stopping the run, they've struggled with it. And I mean, well, let's just talk about that real fast. Right now, they have given up the ninth most rushing yards to teams, 675. They've allowed the ninth most yards after contact to running backs, 3.37 yards after contact per attempt. They have given up 8 rushing touchdowns, which was first, the most in the NFL heading into week 5. And then they goose egged the Steelers. And so now they're the second worst in the NFL with 8. If you believe in the PFF's run grades, PFF has, I know you got to take those grades with a grain of salt, but PFF grades their run defense at 38.6, which is the lowest in the NFL. So PFF says they're the least efficient run defense. And then if you look at next gen, their stuff rate, their ability to stop runs at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage, they're also worst in the NFL at that. They only do it about 10% of the time. So that means 9 out of every 10 rushes that you have, you're gaining positive yards. So you're going to take that as an offense. And especially when you have a team like the Lions, who are an exceptional run team, this is going to be, I believe, a point of emphasis in this game. Can the Lions, how much will the Lions lean on the run versus can Zimmer find an answer in his run defense? Because I think the secondary is good. It's just their run defense is definitely suspect.
Now, did you want to say anything about Schottenheimer? I know McCarthy's more of an offensive guy.
Yeah. McCarthy calls the plays. The big thing with them is they have in the past passed the ball around average, about the like an average league amount of passing. They've done this because they score. They've done this because they can run and they can establish the run as well. Well, they struggle to have a running game on offense, which is hurting them. And then they haven't been scoring points, which has forced them to pass more. So now they pass around like 64% of the time, which is like in the top five, I believe, in amount of the pass run differential. They're very heavily pass oriented. McCarthy likes to lean on play action, but they've moved away from it this year. They run it less than 20% of the time, which is the lowest mark in the NFL. They've instead relied on Dak just doing like quick passes, like throwing the ball under 2.5 seconds, getting the ball out to his playmakers and then letting them try and get yardage after the catch. He's throwing the ball short of the sticks. That's something they've done before, but he's doing it at, again, a very high mark. Over 50% of his passes are behind the sticks. And so they're really being heavily reliant on their skill players to do a lot of the bulk work in getting yardage. At the same time, Dak is putting up yardage. He's one of them. I think he's second most in passing yards. His touchdowns are up there. His turnovers are up there as well. But he's still finding ways to be efficient, even though they've really kind of adjusted some key things in how their offense operates. What else? Teams aren't blitzing Dak as much, and I think some of that is because he's getting the ball out quick, and they're instead trying to focus their attention on stopping the Cowboys skill players. Because again, yak is an important key, so they're trying to put guys in position to make tackles, and just eventually wait for the Cowboys to kind of make a mistake. And so, the Cowboys style of offense almost forces a like bend don't break style of defense, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Against a team like the Giants and the Steelers, it works. Against a team like the Steelers, yeah, not so much. Or I'm sorry, I meant the like the Ravens and the Saints. Yeah, not so much. But
Right.
they've done well the last 2 weeks. But I
No,
do
they
think there's a
just—I don't
little.
know if they've done well. They've just done well enough in the
Right. I
last
think it's a
two
little
weeks.
fool's
Did
gold,
enough
is what
to.
I was saying. Yeah, exactly. So,
But at the
yeah.
same time, Steelers have a very good defense,
Sure.
and the Giants game—that was a Thursday night game. Things can get a little wacky in a Thursday night game, you know. And the other thing we learned about this year is like every team's good enough to beat every other team on any given week.
Certainly seems that way. There's only a couple of teams that, there's
Just
only a
the
handful of
Vikings
teams
are
that look
unbeatable.
strong. Okay.
Well, they're 5-0.
Well,
We're a
so are
game
the
and a half
Chiefs.
behind them.
So are the Chiefs. But yes, I think. But I mean, how many one-loss teams are there? I don't think there's that many one-loss teams either. But
Lions
I
are
doubt
one of them.
exactly. So yeah, Cowboys are 3-2 on the year. Losses have come to the Saints and the Ravens. Saints blew the doors off of them. Both losses have come in Dallas. Or Arlington, I think it is, right? So both of their home games have been losses. And their three road games were the games that they all won. So here it is back in Dallas. And so maybe the Lions can make them 0-3.
You mentioned Chiefs, Vikings, the two 5-0 teams, Houston Texans, Washington Commanders, both 4-1. Then the Lions come in at 3-1. Just to note for everybody out there.
Thank you.
Let's go through the Cowboy offense. Starting with quarterback Dak Prescott, not much to say about him. Embattled, also like Mike McCarthy, a lot of their fan base doesn't like him. He puts up good numbers every year. You would say he's one of the better
All right.
quarterbacks in the league.
I think the thing that's been impressive about him this year is he's been making tight throws. He's been making tough throws. Like even when the coverage is good, he's still been putting the ball in good spots. And so I think that's been a big key in what's led him to, being able to put up yardage. Also helps to have a guy like CeeDee Lamb who can certainly run after the catch and whatnot, but they've had to lean on the pass a lot more. And when you have to lean on the pass, if you can be efficient, even half the time, you're gonna put yardage up, and that's what we're seeing out of the Dallas offense this year. But I think Dak is efficient. You can rattle him, but he's sneaky mobile, and I think the offensive line is also vulnerable. So, but if Dak has time and he can be good.
Don't forget his backup, former Lansing Catholic Central quarterback and Central Michigan quarterback, Cooper Rush. And
Yeah.
Trey Lance is the third stringer.
What a career it's been for Trey. Not even he can't even get into the backup role here, but
Yeah, but well, Cooper Rush is like a veteran type
yeah,
backup.
it's
I
good.
assume
It's
they've
pretty
just
good.
brought in Lance to try to develop him, I guess. See
Yeah.
if they have
Yeah.
something there. Maybe then trade them away for something if they do develop them.
I think they were hoping they could turn him into the next Dak because like you said, Dak kind of gets a raw end of the deal on a lot of in a lot of cowboy minds.
All right, there's a running back in the running back position. We got Rico Dowdell, Ezekiel Elliott returning for his second tour with the Cowboys, and Deuce Vaughn.
They'll also use Hunter Luepke, who is their kind of running back fullback hybrid. They will put him just out there on the field by himself as well.
I like
It's
it.
so it's a little unusual, but they think that he's a hybrid guy who can do well. But the news out of Dallas is that Dowdell has really kind of established himself as RB1. I think Elliott was the guy who got to start the year, and he wasn't good enough. Like he just wasn't playing well enough, and so
Only getting
that
3 yards a carry on the season.
So they've scaled him back. He gets about 30% of the snaps. Dowdell gets about 50% of the snaps. He has 221 of their rush yards as a team, which is only 410, which is second worst in the NFL. As a team, they average 3.5 yards per carry, but Dowdell averages 4.1. And like you said, Elliott's in the low threes. So, Dowdell is the guy who's been the most efficient. At the same time, he's a average back at best, in my opinion. And so he's a guy that the Lions are going to try and take away just to make the Cowboys one-dimensional. And that's how they operate. They go into every game with that approach. And I think they're going to try and do that again. I think Detroit is, because this is their strategy, I don't think Detroit has been run on 100 times yet, collectively, over their 5 games. I think it's been like if you added up I'm sorry, 4 games. If you add up all 4 games, I don't think they've even got to 100 rushes against them because they
83
focus.
carries for all opponents.
There you go. So that's I believe that's lowest in the NFL, and it's because that's where their focus is, and I expect them to do the same again today. Focus on taking Dowdell away. Then all you have to worry about is Dak, and then you can fire off on him.
Wide receiver group for the fifth straight week, not the fifth straight week. Lions will be playing against one of the NFL's headline receivers and CeeDee Lamb this time. Jalen Tolbert, Kevontae Turpin, Jalen Brooks, and the aforementioned Ryan Flournoy. That's the group of five.
Yeah, Brandon Cooks was the starter, and then he went on IR before last game. So Lions will not have to see him. Tolbert has been the guy who's kind of elevated his game with Cooks unavailable. So CeeDee Lamb is your main guy. It was like CeeDee Lamb getting like 80, 90% of the snaps, and then Cooks getting 80, 90% of the snaps, but with Cook and then Tolbert getting like around 50 with Cooks down. Tolbert's in that 80 to 90 range, and Jalen Brooks is in that, it's kind of stepped into that 50% role. The other backups get sprinkles of touches here and there, but those are the three main guys. Obviously, the top two are a little bit more dangerous than Jalen Brooks, in my opinion. Tolbert against the Steelers had 10 targets, 7 receptions, 87 yards, and a game-winning touchdown. So they definitely are
Emerging.
utilizing him. But they needed somebody to step up because Pittsburgh was focused on taking away Lamb, and they needed Tolbert to step up, and he did. So he'll be a guy that he's not just a replacement. It's a little unusual for him to step up because in the 2 years he's been in the league, he hasn't really done a whole lot, but he showed well last game. So we'll see if he can maintain that level of play or not.
All right, tight ends, Jake Ferguson, Luke Schoonmaker, Brevin Spanford, and John Stevens Jr.
Yeah, so they'll go a little heavier with their tight ends. Ferguson plays about 75% of the snaps, Schoonmaker around 30, Spanford 15 to 20% or so. I really think Ferguson and Schoonmaker are really good. They'll rely on them. They'll do two-man sets, and those will be the two guys that they prefer to go to. Spanford's okay. He's just, I don't know,
Fodder.
he's okay. Yeah, I mean, like, he did what he was a good player with the Gophers a couple years ago, but I really think, the Ferguson Schoonmaker combo is pretty strong. Especially w if they're dealing with, like I said, with a little lighter group at receiver, it's nice to have two reliable tight ends that they can lean on.
Right. Offensive line left to right. Tyler Guyton, as we mentioned, there was an injury issue with them. Left guard Tyler Smith, center Cooper Beebe, right guard Zach Martin, one of the best in the business, right tackle Terrence Steele.
So we talked about Guyton and Beebe being rookies and starting, and the inconsistencies of rookie offensive linemen tend to show up, and they have. Both of them are, I think, good players, will develop into good players, but they're going through struggles in the beginning of their rookie seasons, and that's to be expected. Tyler Smith, I think, is a really good guard. Zach Martin is a really good guard. But an interesting note on Zach Martin, he was resting and on Wednesday and didn't practice. And then Thursday he didn't practice, and they added a back injury onto his injury label. So two practices that he didn't practice, one of them was expected, one of them was not. And I do wonder if maybe something's going on with his back. If he is not playing, oh boy. That's a big problem because their reserves are not very good. And so I'm going to go in anticipating he's playing. We're going to talk about it like he's playing, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on that he popped up on the injury report on Thursday. Their right tackle, Terrence Steele. I think if you look at him from if you look at his PFF score, I think it's average to above average. But if you talk to the beat writers that cover the Cowboys, they don't like him very much. They think he's the worst of the five offensive linemen. They also think his pass protection is poor. And if you're Aiden Hutchinson, you have to be chomping at the bit hearing that,
Sure.
right? And so, either way, I think this is Aiden's. It could be a potentially favorable matchup for Aiden because you're either facing off against a rookie or you're facing off against a offensive lineman that the Cowboys writers believe is probably the worst offensive lineman they hit on the amongst the starters. So potential opportunity for Aiden to get some pressures. Again, the fact that we talk about Dak gets the ball out quick means maybe he's not going to get home and get the sacks, but this could be another one of those double digit pressure type games.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. In the interior defensive line, we got Mazi Smith and Osa Odighizuwa. That's a tough one. Defensive end Chauncey Golston at Micah Parsons, the rush linebacker or, edge defender.
Did you okay? You started with
Or,
Mazi Osa. Yep. Did you say
yeah, I
Carl
started with the
Lawson? I'm
defensive
sorry.
tackles. Yeah, on the bench, Tyrus Wheat, Carlos Watkins, Linval Joseph, Carl Lawson, and KJ Henry.
it's kind of a hodgepodge group with the injuries, so it's hard to say for certain how it's going to play out, right? Because at their left defensive end, it was DeMarcus Lawrence.
Net DeMarcus Lawrence, but he's out.
He's on IR. And then they turn to Marshawn Nyland. And Marshawn Nyland is now going to end up on IR. And so now they turn to Carl Lawson. And Lawson is, he start when both Lawrence and Nyland were healthy, he was seeing like 30% of the snaps. Then Lawson gets hurt, he sees 50% of the snaps. Now that Nyland's hurt, is he going to go up to like 60, 80%? Like, that's a big ask to go from like 30 all the way up to like, 75, 80% of the snaps. And he's really, I'm not overly impressed with him, especially at that volume. So I do think that's a weak spot for them. Mazi, man, I really liked Mazi at Michigan. Cowboys asked him to put on weight, which has kind of hurt his explosiveness, and he's lost some power. It's very unusual to see him play as a cowboy compared to what he was as a Wolverine, but he is a movable object. He is a guy who is really not playing well against the run, and he's not pass rushing either. There are two players in the entire NFL who have pass rushed for 50 snaps. One of them. Pass rush for 50 snaps and not got a pressure this season. One of them's Mazi Smith, the other one's Kyle Pecco. But the but Mazi Smith is has he's, he hasn't produced in any which way. And so again, now you're putting a replacement defensive end next to a nose tackle who's struggling, and that's a potential weak spot. I think what the Pittsburgh Steelers did was they looked at Osa, playing next to Ozzie, I'm sorry, Mazi and Carl Lawson, and said, "Well, we're just going to start double teaming Osa because he's their best player. He's their best defensive lineman right now." And so they double teamed him like 50% of the time or something ridiculous like that. And they ended up getting some movement up there because of it. I think Chauncey Golden. I'm sorry, Golston replacing Micah is not as big of a downgrade as people want to believe. Obviously, Micah Parsons is, defensive player of the year. And Golston is not at that level, but Golston is not a bad player. He's an above average player, I think, with good backup. His snaps went from 30 when Parsons was in up to 90 last week, and I thought he played well. So I think Chauncey Golston is a better player. We're looking at a lot of people are looking at Parsons and saying, "Oh man, it's just a huge loss that the Cowboys aren't going to be able to replace." I think Chauncey is a good player. I think they have a better shot at replacing Parsons and than they do replacing Lawrence. I think the losing Lawrence and then losing Nyland is a much bigger blow than Micah Parsons being out, even though, Micah Parsons is a super dynamic player.
All right, linebacker group. Eric Kendricks holds down the middle, but he is listed as questionable outside. DeMarvion Overshown, and then one of Damone Clark, Maris Liufau, Nick Vigil, Buddy Johnson, those are your linebackers.
Yeah, so Kendricks played all those years with Zimmer and ran the middle of the Vikings defense.
Only
He
makes
was
sense that he's a cowboy now.
right. He used to be a terrific cover linebacker, and I think that has kind of dissipated over the last couple of years with him. He's still a very good linebacker, but he's not quite the cover demon that he was when he was with the Vikings. But he's like I said, still a decent linebacker. Overshown is a guy that we both liked a couple years out ago coming out of Texas. He missed his rookie season with an ACL, but he was this super fast linebacker out of Texas in the 23 draft. Flew to the ball, nose for the ball, super fast, and his addition to the starting lineup has really, I think, added a speed element that most weren't expecting and definitely wasn't a part of what we saw out of the Cowboys defense last year. So Overshown's an interesting guy, a guy I really liked, like I said, a couple years ago, and I think it could be a potential problem because of his athleticism. The issue is he's a bit undersized. And so if you're asking he and they play him on the strong side. So you're asking him to do some stuff that's a little bit above his weight class sometimes. And if the Lions want to try and bully a linebacker, I think he's a guy they may end up trying to target, try and bully him, push him around, get physical with him, maybe slow him down a little bit, even though I think he's terrific. Yeah, Clark's another guy I really liked. And we talked about Lafu. Lafu's been the guy who the rookie's been getting more snaps recently. Clark was the guy they leaned on a lot last year. I think Clark is more of a pure Mike, but they're kind of using him out at a will. And so again, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not in there. I'm not watching them on a weekly basis, so I don't know if they're using him out of position, but they don't seem to be using him a lot. And he's and. So, I mean, I think that's telling as well, considering he went from like a starter last year to now being a reserve or rotating LB3. So, decent linebackers, but I'd say average at the average overall.
All right, going back to the defensive backs, you mentioned earlier, Deron Bland is now on IR. So the corners would be that rookie, Kalen Carson, we talked about. Trevin Diggs and Jordan Lewis as your nickel, with Andrew Booth, CJ Goodwin, those two guys off the bench.
And Amani Oruwariye
Oh, that's
as
right,
well.
Amani Oruwariye. Yep. How did I
Yeah,
miss
so
that?
when Carson got injured, so like we said, Bland's been on IR. When Carson got injured, they went to Booth next, because Booth is you might remember him from Clemson.
Yep.
Minnesota drafted him during the Zimmer years, so again, he's familiar with the Zimmer's ideology and scheme. So they turned to him first. He did not play well. So then they turned to Amani, and Amani ended up playing the majority of the game. The following week against the Steelers, Amani was a starter, and he played every snap. We kind of know what Amani is, though, right? Like,
Right,
he's
right.
his good ball skills.
Limited.
Limited though, right? Yeah. Diggs is terrific. Jordan Lewis is terrific. The opposite corner, it could be Carson, it could be Bland, it could be both, or it could be Amani. And I think that is a potential vulnerable spot. So we'll see what they try and do with Diggs. Are they going to try and have him travel with Jamo? And then and Lewis and Amon-Ra have a history, if you remember them
Right.
jawing at each other
Mixing it
quite a
up.
bit. Yeah.
Yep.
And they both seem very prepared to rekindle that relationship as well. And if that matches up, then that's good on good. After that, I think the Lions are going to have an advantage with any other skill player against any other member of the secondary.
Right. The safeties are Donovan Wilson and Malik Hooker. They also have Marquise Belt, Wanya Thomas, and Israel Mukuamu.
So Marquise Bell last year was a starter in the Quinn's defense because he leaned on three safeties in his defense. Now he doesn't even play a rotational role now that Zimmer's in. They lean on Hooker and Donovan Wilson, and Bell is basically like relegated to like special teams at this point. So it's again just like with Damone Clark. These guys were starters last year. They've both been kind of delegated to reserve roles. So one, it's good depth for them, but two, it just speaks to how this scheme is different, and they had specific guys that they were trying to target to fit into what they were trying to do. The thing is I'm not overly impressed with their safeties. They play them too high. They like to play too high safeties. And then like I said, they'll either do two high safeties with press man, or they'll run cover four, which again puts them in two high safeties with your dropping corners into zones as well. Here's the deal: if you do that, you don't you're leaving a potential light box versus David Montgomery and Gibbs, and I think that's a big problem for them. They will try and load the box up at times. They've done it the last few weeks where they've tried to bring guys down, but at their core, they want to keep those guys off the ball as much as possible. So, will they drop Donovan Wilson down to linebacker level to load the box? Certainly. Is he good enough to scare the Lions away from running? No. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see. If the Lions can really establish the run, will Zimmer counter by dropping a safety? And if he does, will it matter? And if it does matter, or even if it doesn't, it's going to put the rest of their secondary in a little bit more vulnerable positions. If they play zone, Lions have zone beaters. If they play man, you're asking someone to hang with J-Mo and Amon-Ra out of the slot, and that can be challenging. So I think it all starts with the run. You establish the run, you try and force that defense to adjust to you, and you make adjustments as to counter whatever Zimmer decides to do to slow the run down. So that would be my game plan, because they haven't been a very good tackling team, and so I want to test it. I want to see if they can tackle David Montgomery, which, as we've seen, is an
It's
absolute
not an
bear,
easy task.
right? And then trying to get Gibbs down in space, that's all, again, very difficult. So I'm going to test that immediately and frequently if I'm Ben Johnson.
All right, moving on to the specialists. The kicker is the best kicker in the NFL, and he's only played 1 year so far. Brandon Aubrey, who's made 7 of 8 field goals from beyond 50 yards, including a long of a 65-yarder, doesn't get much better than him.
Yeah, the whole unit, I believe, is the number one special teams unit in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken. Aubrey's awfully talented, like you said. He arguably is one of the top kickers in the league, and it doesn't slow down from there. They have other good specialists as well.
Punter Brian Anger, who's 36 years old, he was a second team All pro and a pro bowler last year, averaged over 51.4, I think it was 51.4 yards per kick last year, holding to that same type of standard, 51.1%,
I think that's like,
51.1 yards this
right.
year.
I think that's top 10, top eight, maybe even top eight, if I'm not mistaken. Which again, it's very good. They're finding lots of success out of it. So two good kickers. But again, it gets better too.
Kick returner and punt returner Kevontae Turpin, averaging over 35 yards per kick return and 19.4 yards on punt returns, including a 60-yarder that went for a touchdown. Wanya Thomas also in the mix returning kicks, 24-yard average on 6 returns.
Yeah, Turpin's really been the star there. Lions will want to be strategic in trying to get the ball out of his hands, or keep it out of his hands. So they'll have to use Jackbox a little bit more strategically here, but I don't think you want to put the ball in Turpin's hands if you don't have to.
Maybe the most important stat, the biggest advantage for the Cowboys this coming Sunday. Long snapper Trent Sieg has two solo tackles, whereas Hogan Hatton only has one assist. So he's dominating him on the stat sheet.
Signed with Dallas in 2023. Do you know who he replaced?
Oh, shoot, no.
Jake McQuaid, former
Oh,
Lions
really?
linebacker
Okay.
Jake
All right.
McQuaid. Yeah. There's your fun fact for your long snapper fact. I got one for you.
I think we did pretty good with the long snapper this week.
I
Had a lot of
agree.
tidbits. Yeah. All right.
So it's an interesting team because I felt like when studying them, they looked at their offense and said, our offense is good, our defense is better suited to Zimmer, and we've gone 12-5 the last 3 seasons. We should be able to just run it back and do it again. So they didn't aggressively add a running back, which I think was a mistake, and they're starting to pay for it. I think they weren't awfully, again, they weren't aggressive in their offensive line. They just decided to draft and start those guys, and so you're seeing some rookie bumps early in the season. Defense is better suited for Zimmer, but I also think you're lacking some personnel. Add on injuries, and it all of a sudden things look worse. They think they have the depth to overcome it. I disagree. And so I think the defense is vulnerable, and the statistics point to it not being a defense that is, sustainable for a long period of time. They're going to need to get some guys healthy back. Like, for example, Trevor Lawrence and Micah Parsons produced almost half of the team's pressures, just the two of them by themselves. So you remove them from the equation, it doesn't matter who replaces them. Those two guys replacing them are not going to be able to generate that much pressure. So you're going to take a hit on that. And then if you can't stop the run and your pressures are taking a hit, you're going to give Goff time to operate. And we've seen what happens when Goff has time. So I expect the Lions to put up points. I expect Dallas. They've been efficient. And the Lions haven't proven that they can stop the pass yet. So I think Dallas has a chance to put up some points. But in my opinion, I don't think they have enough talent to hang with the Lions in this game. I will give my prediction first because
You did
I
get the
won
win
last
last
week.
week.
I won got the win last week, so we're 2-2 on the season. So I'll take I kind this was kind of my preamble into my score prediction. I think the Lions win this one and they exact their revenge. I am predicting a 31-27 Lions victory.
Okay. All right. I wanted to pick against them for the simple fact that like I picked against them last week and they won. So that was maybe it's like I had to start a thing here. But as we run through the roster and all their injuries, it's hard to think that the Lions should be in firm control of this game. But at the same time, like yeah, if Parsons and Lawrence are out, they're going to get two sacks out of like one of the guys we kind of glossed over,
Sure,
on
sure.
their defense. And they're like other guys are going to step up, and the intangibles. So always somehow go the Cowboys' way when the Lions play against them. Like
Yeah.
traditionally, what is it? The Lions have lost six straight times to the Cowboys.
It's been a lot. I mean, I haven't looked. Usually I go a little deeper, but yeah, I think it's been since like 2012 they haven't won. And so yeah, it's been a while. Like it's And I don't know how many of those games are full of drama, but at least two
Right.
of
Yeah.
those.
And those are big
So,
ones. As one was a playoff game and one was as the Lions were angling for the number one seed.
And I mean, I think Dallas is capable. I don't think they've hit their stride, but you've had to go into Dallas now 3 years in a row. Like, into you're playing at Dallas 3 years
It's
in a
not
row.
intimidating for them, for the Lions anymore.
Not
Because the
anymore.
same
Not
guys
anymore.
have been there three straight years.
And I think they're still upset about last year.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
And that's why, and I, you know, that's why I'd have to pick the Lions too. I'm going to go 28-24. I'll go a little lower scoring than you. But
Okay.
yeah, and like, and CeeDee Lamb could have a huge game, you know, like that
Sure.
one Calvin Johnson game where he had like, you know, 330 yards receiving and 14 catches, and maybe that pushes them over the top. I don't know. Like, it's going to be close. Some things are going to make us upset during the game. And hopefully the Lions end up on top.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident in this game. Like I said, Dallas has shown improvement the last couple of weeks, and they've improved in some of the areas that I mentioned that were weak. At the same time, they did it against the Giants and the Steelers. And the Lions are a different animal than that. Coming off the bye, getting healthy. It just a lot of things are really pointing towards the Lions in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if this turns into like a Seahawks type game where the Lions get up two scores and then they just like start trading blows and just, you know, it's within one score. Now it's back up to two scores and, you know, back and forth kind of like that. But I'm gonna predict a like I said, a tighter score, even though I could see the Lions coming in, you know, coming in hot and trying to get trying to put up a lot of points really quick and put Dallas in a compromising position. So I'm excited for the game. I don't mind the 4 o'clock start. I think that'll be give people a little bit of time to get some things done around their house.
Right.
Hopefully it's not, you know, unproductive time where you're just sitting around wringing your hands or something like that.
Or
But
unproductive time of watching the 1 o'clock games, which is also
oh,
good.
absolutely. Well, that's what I hope people do. I hope they watch the 1 o'clock games, have some fun, and they're ready to go for 4:25.
Right. Ratings wise, no movement on the Apple Podcast. We did get a few more ratings in Spotify, so that's great. So, you know, thanks for everybody for doing that. And if you'd like to leave one, go ahead and keep it up.
Yeah, certainly appreciated.
No, that's it. It's gonna be a short podcast this week because we only had to do half of our normal work. So 2 weeks in a row, half time. So that's not bad.
Yeah, we need it, you know, with there's a
Well,
lot going
Tiger
on.
baseball.
Exactly.
The
Tiger baseball
series
is.
stretches till Saturday. Now we're gonna have another game to deal with.
Well, I'll tell you, it when you're trying to get work done and you're spending 6 hours of your work week watching baseball instead of actually working, it tends to make it you have to work a little harder. So
Right.
I appreciate the it happening on a lighter week for the Lions, certainly.
And that game on Saturday, there's no Spartan or Wolverine football to interfere
Yeah.
with watching, although there's a bunch of great college football on this weekend. A lot of top
Right.
tier games.
So all relaxing stuff. Like you get extra football on Saturday, extra football on Sunday, get to watch the Tigers beat the beat Cleveland on Saturday as well, and it should be a fun weekend, fun sports weekend for Detroit fans.
Right. All right. That's it. Anything you wanted to add? I think that's it. I think we're good to
No,
go.
I'm good.
All right. That's it for us this week. So until next time, let's go, Lions.